Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our special guest, State Representative Michael Chippendale, Republican of Foster. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and I'm happy to be here.
Legislative leaders and public safety officials this week unveiled a 9-point proposal meant to reduce gun-related violence in Rhode Island. The proposals include banning guns defined as assault weapons, limiting magazines to 10 rounds, and creating a task force to look at mental health issues. Mike, you're an advocate for gun owners' rights, so let's start with you. If this 9-point plan becomes law, will it reduce the threat of gun violence in Rhode Island?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Well, none of these laws or proposed laws with these bills actually address the problem in any way, shape, or form. All they will do will make law-abiding gun owners criminals themselves. Gangs don't abide by laws. Criminals don't abide by laws. People who are intent on killing someone, which is the ultimate breaking of the law, be it man's or God's law, do not care whether or not they violate a magazine capacity law while they're killing people.
What about the ideas there? I think there's some things in here. You can make the argument, first of all, we don't have a lot of gun violence, and we do have a fairly restrictive policies. But what about the idea of starting the debate and looking at things like straw purchases, looking at things of restrictions on juveniles, and those kinds of things that it seems to me close up some loopholes and send a stronger message in terms of our position on guns in our society?
Well, I agree with that, that straw purchases, no one in the firearms community supports that sort of activity.
So there is legislation to beef that up. You support that.
Based on the language, which I have not completely vetted yet because it is so fresh, depending on how it's phrased, I may support that legislation.
Scott, efforts to make gun laws in Rhode Island more stringent have traditionally faced an uphill battle at the General Assembly. Do you think things will be different this year in the aftermath of Newtown?
It's interesting. If you polled this package with the general public, you would find overwhelming support. However, it's a funny issue with guns because the passion is on the minority side, the gun owners, mainly the gun manufacturers and the NRA. I'm interested in how in New England there's a large split between the urban states, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts. All the senators there support gun control, stricter gun controls. But if you look at the rural states, New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont, where hunting is more part of the right of growing up, particularly for younger boys, they're all against stronger gun control. So it's very interesting.
Well, you know, I'm delighted about we're having this conversation because, first of all, we know that nationwide, most people support, for example, registering and so forth. It's this misperception that's been cultivated by the NRA. And what I'm delighted about this debate is it's like the curtain has finally been lifted, the kind of ham-handed tactics that they are now essentially going to pursue in Rhode Island, I think is going to backfire. And I think it's going to reduce the influence of the organization, particularly in New England.
Let's go with some questions for our special guest, State Representative Michael Chippendale. As conservative a justice as Antonin Scalia of the U.S. Supreme Court has said that states can put some restrictions on guns and gun ownership, what do you see as being the appropriate remedy for curbing the threat of gun violence and the threat of school shootings in Rhode Island?
In Rhode Island specifically, I would say simply, we need to enforce the laws that we have on our books right now. We do a very poor job of doing that. There are numerous examples that we can't get into in this format, but will be presented over the course of the hearings that demonstrate very clearly that the laws we have on our books are not being enforced. Were they to be enforced, you would see a drop in the crime that does exist. And as was pointed out, Rhode Island is not a hotbed of these high-profile shootings and gang activities that use these relatively briefly described guns in the legislation.
Let's go to Scott.
From a national perspective, though, a representative, a lot of people think this is just crazy, that if you have someone who can go to a gun show and buy a weapon down in Texas or Florida, without any, it's easier to buy a gun than it is to buy a beer in a lot of our places in our country. And I mean, isn't that just crazy, some of these exemptions that the gun lobby has carved out for themselves over the years?
I'm not going to defend the laws or the regulations in other states. Rhode Island does not have such a loophole, as it's called, the gun show loophole. I disagree with that in the state of Rhode Island. That would not be right for Rhode Island. I think our laws on that are fine. We don't have that. That's not a problem in Rhode Island.
Let's go to Maureen.
I have a question on a different topic as far as local events are concerned. What do you make of this fandango with the fire districts in Coventry? It's up your way. How did that ever happen, and what would be your suggestion?
Well, we're switching very quickly here. Okay, how did it happen? There was an accounting error at some point, roughly two and a half years ago, to the point of 33% of their budget. They thought they had $2 million more than they actually did have.
I'm asking a larger question. How did they ever wind up with four separate districts in this small rural community?
Oh, okay. So we're going very far back. This precedes my time as not only a legislator, but it precedes my time as someone who's been involved with Coventry. How they wound up with the four districts, I can't exactly tell you. However, the various individual volunteer fire departments that were scattered about Coventry, which is Rhode Island's largest geographic town, got together at some point and formed these districts based on the demographics and the geography of the individual areas. So they're more suited to the Western Coventry district addresses brush, has the better ability to address brush fires.
So do you think this is an effective system?
No, I don't. I think that it's duplicitous. We have four fire chiefs making somewhere around $80,000 each.
Indeed.
Which is certainly not efficient for one town. I think it needs to be streamlined and consolidated. Absolutely.
In other news this week, Governor Lincoln Chafee unveiled Marcel Valois as his choice to lead the State Economic Development Corporation. Valois led the EDC for a few years in the late 1990s. Scott, assuming Valois meets approval with the state Senate, what do you think he should focus his attention on in leading the EDC?
I think that people know what to focus the attention on. The good thing about Valois is he's not going to need a lot of on-the-job training. He has public service and he has private sector experience. He knows the ropes. He knows the legislature. He used to work for Governor Almond, who is a very pragmatic governor, whose views actually are pretty similar to Governor Chafee's, if you look at their kind of moderate Republican heritage. And I think Valois is about as good a choice as you could find.
Representative Chippendale, what do you make of this choice, and how do you think Valois should focus his attention if he gets the job?
Well, I am always an optimist. So I'm looking forward to Mr. Valois executing plans that are realistic and pragmatic and going after industries that we know are successful, not rolling the dice on things that have never been proven. I think we need to look at what's available out there for existing industry. And as much as we've diverted from that debate, the firearms industry is an industry right now that in our neighboring state of Connecticut, there are over 50 companies that are being thrown out of Connecticut based on their recent firearms laws that need a new home. And we're right next door, and we could bring thousands of very good paying jobs to Rhode Island by just simply inviting them here.
I don't think that's going to happen, number one. Number two, the biggest thing we have to do right now is preserve the jobs we have making larger weapons than handguns. Those are submarines down at Electric Boat. And that's going to be very interesting to see how the state works with General Dynamics and the Electric Boat Division on trying to get them some more land in Quonset.
Maureen, let's get you to weigh in on the selection of Marcel Valois to lead the State Economic Development Corporation.
Oh, I agree. I think it's an excellent choice from a number of perspectives. And I think the idea is that he's looking to look at the substantive policies that were suggested, for example, by RIPEC and John Simmons, without the structural changes. And I think in the short term, that's a very workable plan to continue on and not lose too much momentum when it comes to dealing with a lot of these issues. Particularly, Scott's right, the issue that's coming up at Quonset is going to be a very big deal for economic development.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And State Representative Michael Chippendale, Republican of Foster.
Thank you very much.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.